The next case is 06-1137, in re guardianship of Walter Hollins, Jr. Ms. Ballen.
Good morning. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Stacy Ballen. I represent the appellant Frederick Nance. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The 8th District ruling below strips the probate courts of their powers to protect Ohio wards. By holding...
To protect Ohio what?
Ohio wards, minors. By holding that probate courts instantly and totally lose subject matter jurisdiction when a minor ward in their career turns 18, the appellate court has eviscerated valid probate statutes that do grant probate courts continuing jurisdiction after a minor ward turns 18.
Well, what's their responsibilities? What does the court have the jurisdiction to do once a minor turns 18 in a situation such as this, where it's a guardianship of the estate only?
The statute provides that when a guardianship of a minor ends, statute 2109.302 provides that every guardian has to file a final account.
So it's an administrative responsibility.
I disagree, Your Honor, because after that final account is filed, pursuant to 2109.32A, the court has to hold a hearing. And the statute says, quote, at the hearing upon the account, the court shall inquire into, consider, and determine all matters relative to the account and the manner in which the fiduciary executed thy fiduciary's trust. And the court may order the account approved and settled or make any other order as the court considers proper.
This relevant to the account.
Relative
not to... Not a continuation of the guardianship, but relative to the final accounting.
And when you couple that statute with the statute of 2111.50, where the probate court is the superior guardian of all wards, and when you couple that with statute 2101.24C, where the probate court has plenary power at law and in equity to dispose fully of any matter pending before it, that is the mechanisms by which the legislature has granted the probate courts subject matter jurisdiction that continues after the ward turns 18. It is not just a purely ministerial.
How long could that continue?
Well, you can't hold the hearing on the final account till at least 30 days after it's been filed, and it can't be filed until at least day one after the ward turns 18.
Okay, but you say under these plenary powers and subject matter jurisdiction, you just made the statement that it's up to the court then to retain jurisdiction for how long?
The court retains jurisdiction until it has dealt with the final account. It does not go on forever. I agree with that statement, if that's the premise of your question. But clearly, under 2109.32A, the court has a statutory duty and mandate to have its final hearing.
In a situation that we're talking about where there's a date certain on which the minor turned 18 and became an adult, all of the dealings, the financial dealings up to that point, are subject to the probate court's scrutiny in the final accounting. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Any other funds that flow to that minor who is now an adult past the date of their birth date, making them an adult, are not subject to that final accounting?
I would agree only to the extent, though, that the statute provides that at the hearing, the court is to inquire into all matters related to the account. So to get...
But those dollars that flow to the now adult are not matters to be concerned of the probate court prior, if they flow past the 18th birthday.
Your Honor, I don't know if you can put that bright of line on it with respect to, you have to look at what was pending.
Let me give you an example.
Sure.
The child has a guardianship of the estate up to the point where he's 18. The next day he wins the lottery. Are those dollars subject to probate court scrutiny? The lottery dollars?
I would think it depends when the final account has been filed, Your Honor.
Why would that make a difference here? You're only interested in the management of those dollars up until the time the ward becomes an adult. The next day, the next week, wins the lottery. Why is that the probate court's concern?
Because, Your Honor, just as this court held in Hards versus Claimer, at the midnight hour at 12:01, when the ward turns 18, the court's subject matter jurisdiction does not end. The court does have the subject matter jurisdiction to carry through those powers and duties necessarily involved in the proper accounting and settlement of the guardianship account.
The guardianship dollars that were part of the guardianship while the individual was a minor.
Right, Your Honor. And in this case, factually, the dollars involved were part of this case while the individual was a minor. In fact, the court had the hearing on the application to approve the settlement of the dollars at stake. The court did not journalize its entry until 2 days after the minor turned 18, but there had been a full hearing, 3 weeks or 4 weeks prior to when the guardian had turned 18. So under the particular facts of this case, the court had the statutory power to dispose fully of that matter that was pending before it, which was the settlement dollars and the hearing. The court ordered the approval of the settlement as modified by the court and the subsequent events that ensued. But of concern for the purposes of this appeal is the broad holding of the Eighth Circuit's ruling. And let there be no mistake about what the Eighth Circuit held.
Well, we could affirm here. We're not bound by the Court of Appeals' broad language. Obviously, we can tailor our decision to meet the precise legal issue here. Can't you agree with that, certainly?
Sure.
So I know you object to the broad, it's pretty broad language, but we don't need to accept that language if we affirm, do we?
If you affirm with and modify it, I would submit that the hearing and the precedent of the holding of Hards versus Claimer is exactly right on point. Where this court protected a ward in death, so should the court protect a ward in life. And if you took the exact holding of Hards versus Claimer and instead of saying upon ward's death, substituted the words ward upon attaining age 18, it's exactly the same.
Claimer, wasn't there, we have this issue of whether the guardianship was created for the 18, for the minor or also because of disability. Here, you don't really, well, you argue, I'm going to test your argument on the fact that, well, there was information in the record that the minor here was also suffered a disability, but there's never a hearing, never any determination by the judge that's a purpose for which the guardianship could continue, is there?
Right. I agree with your Honor's statement. What concerns us today is with respect to what is the subject matter of the court's the court subject matter jurisdiction once the minor turns 18.
Right. Okay.
Putting aside.
Is it pretty much limited then to the jurisdiction of the court on the 18th birthday of the child, or is it also the continuing jurisdiction of the court to conclude the work that it had undertaken? Isn't that sort of part of the same question?
Yes, Judge, I agree completely. And using the statute as the duty and right of the court, the first part of the statute says...
It's almost impossible for a probate court to terminate every file on the 18th birthday of every child for which a guardianship had been undertaken.
Especially when a final account cannot even be filed.
Well, we had a magistrate approve or recommend approval of the settlement in this case, didn't we?
With modification.
Yes.
And that was before the ward turned 18.
And the court hadn't yet concluded its work on that, but that was the basis for the resolution of the case in the trial court.
Right. The court had actually held the hearing because on the objections to the magistrates.
The trial court couldn't have concluded a final judgment entry until the probate court authorized the terms of the settlement.
That's correct. And in this particular case, there was the settlement as well as the eventual jury trial and other pieces of the matter.
Yes. So this really isn't just termination on the 18th birthday of a child, but it's also the concomitant duty of the court to conclude the work that it's done. And to go to Justice O'Connor's issue, not to start other matters collateral to the matter that the court had before it.
You answered it much better than I, Your Honor, and that's exactly right. The legislatures have mandated the statute of 2109.32A as the mechanism for the court to wrap up what was before it by holding the hearing on the final account to consider all matters relative to that final account.
But we're only concerned with the settlement of the 1.9?
1.5, I believe.
I'm sorry. Okay, $1.5 million. That's all we're concerned about at this point, correct?
Well, we're really concerned about a ruling on page 7 and page 9 of the appellate court that strips all probate courts of any power to issue, quote, any order prior to, you know.
In this particular case, though, I mean, we'll deal with the extent of the language of the 8th District, whether it needs to be modified. But for the accounting, the subject matter of the accounting, it's only the settlement with UH, correct?
That is all that is at issue. What appellee will argue is that the court only has the power to rubber stamp and approve that settlement and the disbursement of the attorney's fees and expenses. What we would say, and what we do say in our briefs, is no, it is not a ministerial rubber stamping. The court has the power and the statutory duty as the superior guardian of all the wards. The court has the duty to hold that hearing on the final account, and he has the right to make any order as he considers proper with relation to those settlement funds.
But nothing really is final until the judge, not the magistrate, but the judge enters the order. Isn't that right? The magistrate makes a recommendation to the judge, but that can change. That's the judge's decision. Here there was no entry. I mean, in terms of the wrapping up, sort of, and there's no question, it seems to me, that the law is that once the judge has decided what the status of the law or the case is, then obviously there's 30 days at least to wrap up that. But here the judge had not made a decision before the minor turned 18, did he? Or did I miss the record on that? Or
the order had not been journalized. We don't know what the judge's own internal decision was.
He rushed to, obviously it was Friday, and he rushed and got it journalized, I guess, on Monday, but
right. The ward turned 18 on a Saturday. The hearing had been a few weeks before then, and he had considered all the evidence.
But the hearing is a hearing, and we don't know what decision the judge makes from the hearing until the judge enters an order. Right. Let me ask you about it's probably maybe not relevant to us. Maybe it's more curiosity. I understand from the briefs that the Michigan probate court now has entered a settlement or is facilitating a settlement of this issue, has it not? And I think one of the briefs indicates that there's also apparently money been paid out on the settlement.
The money was paid out not to the guardian, as the probate court here in Ohio ordered, but it was paid out to the plaintiff's lawyer, who then put it in trust. The Michigan probate court then issued an order approving a settlement on different terms, reinstating attorney's fees. There was a difference like 40% versus 30%.
Substantial attorney fees, it sounds like, Michigan. Yeah.
But when the Michigan probate court heard about what was going on in the Ohio probate court, the Michigan probate court then issued an order saying, I'm not touching this until we figure out what's going on in Ohio. The Michigan probate court recognized that it, you know, was
a legal issue here.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Counsel, you started out by saying this was all about protecting, was it wards or courts?
Wards with a W, a minor.
Wards. But it isn't, is it? It's all about protecting lawyers.
Lawyers? I disagree, Your Honor. It's about protecting wards. And and making sure that lawyers don't take advantage of warts. Because what could happen here, if the opinion below stands, the consequences that flow can be disastrous. You could have misuse of property, theft of monies, misappropriation of assets, and the person that's harmed is the very person the guardianship laws are supposed to protect, the minor.
And the mother moved to Michigan because she was so happy with the way things were going in Cuyahoga County.
I'm not going to speculate as to her motives, Your Honor, but the record is what the record reflects.
Backing up a little bit to the procedure here, the initial guardian,
McLeod,
is that how you said it? Okay. He was removed because he filed a guardianship accounting that indicated no funds.
I don't think that was the reason that the judge removed him. When the judge journalized its entry on January 31, approving the settlement as modified and directing how the funds be dispersed, the guardian, Mr. McLeod, did not follow that January 31 order. The court subsequently had a hearing and ordered him to disperse the, take care of the funds as that. He did not do that, and at that point, the court removed Mr. McLeod, as the court has the right to do under the statute, and appointed Mr. Nance as the successor guardian to go and protect the ward's interest and to file an action to get those funds back and have them dispersed correctly. There's no other questions? I'll sit down, but we do ask that the judgment be reversed.
Thank you, Ms. Ballin. Mr. Rowe.
Chief Justice Moyer, Justices of the Supreme Court, proper resolution of this case starts with the Heinerman Head Note number 4, which states that a minority guardianship terminates when the ward is no longer a minor. The germane issue here is the question of whether or not the minor's application for settlement continued to be properly before the court. I think that's the real distinction here.
Well, it was properly jurisdictioned in the probate court in Cuyahoga County. You agree with that?
Subject matter jurisdiction was proper initially when the application of Mr. McLeod was filed seeking authority for two things under the standard probate form 16.
Yes.
He sought authority to be appointed so that a personal injury case could be pursued.
Correct.
Stated that Mr. Hollins was a minor, and also asked the court for authority to manage minors' settlement proceeds once the settlement, if it indeed was achieved, was approved by that court.
And that court undertook to issue a judgment authorizing settlement of that litigation, did it not?
No, I actually don't think the court did anything. The Mr. McLeod then filed on, again, standard probate form that this court approved in its rules of superintendence, an application to approve a minor's settlement.
With the probate court.
With the Cuyahoga County Probate Court.
Precisely the point. So the litigant went to court seeking approval and the subjecting itself to the jurisdiction of the Cuyahoga County Probate Court.
Well, certainly the court was already...
That's not an issue.
That application was filed, I believe, in October of 04.
Do you think the court has the right to conclude its work in connection with that or not?
I do not, Your Honor. In this particular case...
Is there any obligation on the part of a guardian to submit a final account to the court in connection with an application to settle a case like that?
Well, interestingly, in this particular case, factually, in this case, as the court is aware, Mr. Hollins turned 18 on the 29th of January. Mr. McLeod, the guardian of the estate, whose letters were issued only on the basis of minority, there had been no legal adjudication of incompetency, filed a second and final account on January 31st. He also filed an application to be appointed as guardian of an alleged incompetent relative to his estate, and Regina Harris, the mother of the, at that point, allegedly incompetent adult, filed an application through Mr. McLeod to be appointed guardian of the estate, excuse me, of the person of her son. So as it relates to Mr. McLeod's actions, Your Honor, they were entirely consistent with the statutory scheme that is in place under 211101, which starts with the basic definition of two types of guardianships under the state of under the law of the state of Ohio: guardians of the minor and guardians of incompetence.
Now I'll go back to the question I asked you before.
Certainly.
Assuming that all of that occurred, does the court have the right to approve the final account of the guardianship that it was involved with?
I do not think it does, Your Honor. This particular case surrounds that issue of what, in fact, is a guardianship of a minor intended to do.
So your view would be that at the age and date of the child's 18th birthday, the probate court ceases jurisdiction and can do nothing?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. The court can do various things that are limited under the code.
After the minor reaches majority.
And the court's decision in the probate court below and Mr. McLeod's actions defined what that really was.
Well, counsel, in this situation, or let's take it out of this situation, there was an offer of settlement pending in the Common Pleas Court for this Med-Mal.
Correct.
That could not be approved until the probate court approved it. There was a hearing on the settlement, the minor settlement, prior to this, while this individual was a minor.
Correct.
Okay. Taking his continued incompetency out of the equation here, had he turned 18 before the probate court journalized an approval of the settlement, okay, say he's a competent 18-year-old, would the Common Pleas Court that's hearing the Med-Mal need the probate court's approval at that point for the settlement of that Common Pleas Med-Mal case?
Absolutely not. The 2131, I believe it's 02, provides the sections relative to legal disability.
Right.
And legal disability of an incompetent by reason of his minority is removed once he is of the age of majority. In fact, I find it highly unlikely that an insurer would not insist upon a signature from an adult whose money had not been dispersed by age 18, had not yet been sent to lawyer, party, whoever. I'm sure checks would have been redrafted. As a practical matter, these checks come out with counsel's name for the particular individual in the litigation and the party. And I'm quite confident, based on doing PI law for all these years, that minor now turned age of majority, now an adult, name would have gone on that check, and that release would have, in fact.
Well, this situation is complicated by the ongoing incompetency of the ward past the age of 18. Obviously, when a child is a ward, the only incompetency that's necessary to be alleged for the guardianship of the estate is the minority. That's an incompetency legally all in of its own. When this individual turns 18, he has a continued incompetency based upon his injuries associated with the Med-Mal case. Because that had not been adjudicated as of this date, where does that leave the ward?
Well, where it leaves the
Who
ward...
Who protects the ward in that transitional period?
It's interesting. Mr. McLeod and I have been debating this for weeks now, and that question came up. How would I answer that particular question? There would be a gap if protection was needed. But here, in this particular case, all kinds of situations could occur. But what did occur here is Mr. McLeod, without knowing what Judge Corrigan's order was going to be, took steps to provide that protection. His mother took steps to provide that protection by filing applications on the very next business day after the ward turned 18.
In what court?
In the Cuyahoga County Probate Court, Your Honor.
Okay. Because they live there as of that time.
As of that time, they live there. And the earliest thing in the record to indicate that they no longer live there was the February 25th letter of Jeffrey Feiger to Judge Corrigan, which was exhibit 5 of the hearing that was conducted.
And that was then was later dismissed or withdrawn?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. It was dismissed on February 23rd of 2005.
Without the court taking any action to determine his incompetence?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But between the period of him turning 18 and the order of the court being entered, proving the settlement and disbursements, he was an incompetent.
He was not an incompetent as an adjudicatory matter.
I understand that, but he was an incompetent, and an insurance company could not have settled with him during that period.
Nor anyone else. Until the Michigan court approved that settlement was going nowhere.
Or
until a court of an Ohio court.
Or if we rule against you, until the Ohio probate court approved it, it was going nowhere.
Well, I still think if this court would adopt the basic Hards versus Clamor head note relative to jurisdiction of, and actually I don't think that was a minor, I think that was an adult ward, but in the Hards versus Clamor case, this court said the court has continuing jurisdiction to touch upon matters where journal entries had already spoken to the issue. And in Clamor, a master commissioner had been appointed to consider the question of the amount of whether or not the amount of legal fees that were generated by litigation that had been settled, had been approved, had been part of the assets of that particular ward. The question was, how do you tidy up that particular guardianship? Should we pay the master commissioner, who the probate court had jurisdiction to pay, wanted to pay? The Ms. Hands, who was the daughter of Ms. Clamor, had been removed by the probate court, a new guardian appointed. Ms. Hands had been appointed executor of the estate and of her mother, and that matter was here as a matter of right on an appeal from an application for a writ of prohibition. And this court said, and narrowly defined, the continuing responsibilities of the court to be to approve the account. The head note also clearly says the powers of that guardian are over at death. The powers of a guardian of a minor are over at the age of majority.
For the guardian to engage in any new activity on behalf of the ward that is now, but not the power or the duty of the guardian to file a final accounting and account for all the expenditures made from the previous year's accounting, make sure the order to terminate the guardianship is appropriately journalized, et cetera. There's a lot of loose ends that need to be tied up by virtue of the responsibility placed on the guardian.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. In other words, there are ministerial actions that I suppose could get into the question of substantive issues relative to money, but as it relates to substantive rights of the ward themselves, the guardian's power is over at the age of majority. That minor's application, you can't have a minor's settlement if there's no minor.
I understand that, but as far as the guardian goes, the court has jurisdiction over both the guardian and the ward's assets up until the time that the final accounting is approved, provided those assets were captured within the guardianship prior to 18.
I think that's right. I mean, there were some things in there. That, as far as the money, yes. As far as assets, certainly. As far as approval of the guardian's fees, certainly. There are statutory steps that need to be taken to close a guardianship case.
Counsel,
yes, sir.
Now that, Mr. Nance was, your client was removed, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And Mr. Nance was appointed by the probate court.
That is correct.
And Mr. Nance has appealed here to the clerk of the Ohio Supreme Court. Who pays all these legal fees?
I don't know, Your Honor. The letter of Exhibit 5 to the hearing that was introduced at the hearing on my client's removal that is part of this record clearly demonstrated that Mr. Feiger, who was the primary lead counsel in the malpractice case, had indicated to Judge Corrigan that Mr. Hollins was no longer a resident of the state of Michigan, and also reflected the fact that the court, probate court, had attempted to follow the statutes relative to appointing guardians for incompetence by appointing a courted investigator and following the dictates that must be mandatorily followed under Chapter 2111 relative to service and investigation, the right to counsel, the right to have family members present. All of those particular statutes are in place to protect the rights of an adult alleged incompetent. And the bottom line was, the letter pointed out that the ward was gone. The ward was no longer a resident of the state of Ohio.
But if Mr. Rance is successful in pursuing this appeal to this court, then the probate court in Cuyahoga County's settlement of the case and the reduction in attorney fees leaves a lot more money to pay his fees, does it not?
I suppose so. I don't believe that's the motivation. I believe that Judge Nance was doing Judge Corrigan's bidding, and I'm not indicating any ill motives there. I just think that I don't know about the money part.
But I understand.
I don't know who Mr. Nance's fees are being paid for. I have no idea.
But my understanding from the briefs is the reason it was being pursued is because the Michigan court was granting it a substantial amount of greater attorney fees and leaving less for the ward.
Most interestingly, Your Honor, if you look at the final exhibit of the hearing, which I think was Exhibit 3, the legal fees were less than Judge Corrigan awarded.
But the expenses were about...
The expenses that Judge Corrigan awarded were $28,000 against about $500,000 of expenses that were over 7 years of litigation. Mm-hmm. But the legal fees technically were less.
Oh, fees and
Mr.
expenses.
Mr. Rowe, if I could turn to the legal question of the gap again, and I want to verify something. You responded to Justice Stratton so that I understand. I mean, I understand that the subject matter jurisdiction, once the minority is gone, your view is then there's no need for the probate court to act because the individual's an adult. But once the application for incompetency is filed with the probate court, I think Justice Stratton said at that point the minor or the new adult who has not yet been declared incompetent could not have entered a settlement for himself. Is that correct?
I don't believe that is correct. I think it's correct here. I believe technically Walter Hollins, given the injuries that are described in the application, wasn't going to trot around and sign a release. I mean, I want to be candid about that. But of course, there's a whole panoply of rights to protect the rights of incompetents who don't think they are incompetent.
Right. But as a matter, just in the abstract, I want to make sure if an individual is no longer a minor, has not been declared incompetent, in that gap period, that individual does have the right to act as an adult, correct?
Unless an emergency order was issued under 2111, I'd agree with that.
And then once the incompetency is declared, of course, then the probate court, again, has subject matter jurisdiction.
That's correct. But in this case, that money did not go anywhere.
Right.
This guardian did not disperse any money. That money was held pursuant mm-hmm. to custom in an escrow account of Mr. Feiger. The court was well aware of that at the time our second supplemental accounting was filed to disclose what had occurred in the state of Michigan.
Thank you.
I'd like to pursue that question
about
the settlement proceeds. As I understand the facts, settlement was reached sometime in May of 2004.
Your Honor, I'm not sure, but it certainly was before the filing of the application, and I think August or September of 2004.
Was there a settlement check issued?
Not until February of 2005.
February of 2005.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I have maybe the last question, may not be, Mr. Rowe, but I'd like to get you back to what I think is the issue. I'm going to try and state your position, apply all these general principles we've been talking about, and see if I'd state your position correctly, that if the probate judge here had entered an order which accepted, or whatever the order said, but it provides for the settlement and how the settlement fund should be paid out, a schedule and all that sort of thing, if he'd filed that order before the ward became 18, would you agree then that the probate court would have the authority to make certain that order had been complied with, whether it was within the 30 days, I don't know, but isn't that the Does that correctly state your position?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And if that order came on January 28th, probably Mr. McLeod still has a wonderful client, the best client he ever had in his life, who's now in the state of Michigan.
And the court's authority, even though he's reached 18 on January 31st, or whatever it was, 2 days before the entry was filed, that the court's authority to wrap up or to do the non-substantive things would be to be certain that the guardian had acted pursuant to the entry that the court entered when the minor was still a minor.
If it's back to the prior question, I think that's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, then additional steps would have, you still would have needed, however, to file the guardianship applications relative to the incompetency.
I want to keep that out of it because I think that just clouds it. That's not here. I mean, that's not an issue. That's not the issue. But that, I'm trying to distinguish between the substantive acts of the probate court and the acts which the statute authorizes the court to monitor the sort of called wrap-up. The substantive issue, it seems to me, would be approving or whatever he does with the substantive issue. Am I going to accept this offer of settlement, or am I going to modify it? Whatever I do as a judge, I do that while the minor is still 18. I put that on. That's my entry. That's my decision. And then the administrative or the wrap-up issues are the manner in which the guardian has executed on that, implemented that agreement. Seems like a fairly simple breakdown to me, but
I agree with that, Your Honor, and I think that the standard probate form 15.0 relative to the acceptance of duties that this court has approved, has been used since the late 70s, says that an application that after the guardianship is terminated, the account will be filed within 30 days. So that must mean something. I mean, the guardianship, it implies that something's done, substantive things are done. Let's account for what happened while those substantive rights existed. And the specific instructions of the probate court of Cuyahoga County said exactly the same thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. Ms. Ballin, you've used your time, but we gave Mr. Rowe a lot of extra time. Take a minute, see what you can do with a minute. Try to generate a question from the court, and that'll extend your time. I'll give you the first question. What do you think of my past statement to Mr. Rowe? The substantive conduct by the judge would be entering an order, putting an order on, which wasn't done here while the minor was still a minor. And then assuming that's done within that period of time, that the wrap-up sort of issues are the judge's authority to monitor the conduct of the guardian, to be certain that the guardian has implemented the order.
Your Honor, on January 31st, 2 days after the minor had turned 18, two things happened. Not only did the court journalize its entry that's in dispute, but a new application for guardianship based on incompetency was also filed. This gap term is a very important issue that all of Your Honors have brought up. Under the statute, a guardian for an incompetent can't be appointed for at least 30 days. So you now have a gap between when the ward turned 18 and when a guardianship for an incompetent is.
We're writing law not just for this case. I mean, in many cases, there would not be an application for an incompetency application.
Right.
So the precise question for us is, when does the authority of the probate court end? When is it terminated?
And my point is, Your Honor, because of 2111.50, the probate court is the superior guardian. So his guardianship does not end until he takes care of his statutory duties. So during this gap, when we're trying to figure out who's going to be the guardian for the ward that's now turned 18, who's also an incompetent, it's the probate court who is the guardian during that gap. And during that gap, he has, pursuant to what the legislature has passed and mandated, he has the power and authority not just to, quote, wrap up loose ends. He's got statutory duties where he has to look at all, has the full of power to dispose fully of any matters pending before it, and clearly the settlement application had been pending before it. He also has the statutory duty, once that final account is filed on January 31, to have his hearing, and it's not just a rubber stamping.
So your I guess your your statement would then include a situation in which, let's take the date of moving from minority to adulthood, and the probate court doesn't put on an entry until January 20th. So to cover that gap, you're saying that the probate court's jurisdiction continues to so that the minor isn't in some sort of a limbo where he can go out and do all sorts of things that we wouldn't want a minor or incompetent to do. Is that that would be a separate rule we'd have to write, isn't it? Is that right?
I don't think you have to write a separate rule, Honor. I think that's exactly what the statute envisions. The probate court is always the superior guardian. That doesn't end at midnight when the minor turns 18, and in this particular
Well, why not? There was no determination of incompetence.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's a myth in this case.
He may
or may not have been incompetent, but as far as the court is concerned, he wasn't.
You're exactly right, Your Honor. There was no finding of incompetency pursuant to the statute.
Plenty of people walk around a lifetime that are incompetent. That no probate court has ever made such a finding.
But isn't the point in this case that the court has...
Let's see if she wants to answer the question or
go ahead.
Speak to the point.
Judge O'Donnell was doing a good job for me there. But Your Honor, you're right. There was no finding of incompetency. But what happened at the midnight hour, you still have statutes that say the probate court has to complete its statutory duties, and it's not a rubber stamping.
I understand that. And before you move on to Justice O'Donnell, you indicated that the Court of Appeals opinion essentially neuters the power of the probate judge, and specifically in what way? It's not a real long opinion, and I'm having trouble finding what the...
Page 7, Your Honor, quote, once the ward turned 18, the probate court was without jurisdiction to issue any orders. Page 8, mm-hmm. quote, because the probate court's jurisdiction terminated when the ward turned 18, the probate court had no jurisdiction to enter any subsequent orders. Those two holdings are so broad, they eviscerate all these statutes that I've been talking about.
Okay.
My turn? Isn't the real point, though, that since the court undertook the approval of the settlement from the Common Pleas Court, it should have the right to conclude that business and that matter, regardless of whether it gets into the majority of the minor? Isn't that really the single issue that we have to really resolve here, whether or not the court has that authority or doesn't have it?
Absolutely, and we submit under the statute 2109.32A, the court does have that statutory authority, duty, and mandate, and the opinion below eviscerates.
Counsel, let's address that. I think I maybe wouldn't agree with that. Had Mr. Hollins not been impaired and there was this pending settlement in the Court of Common Pleas dealing with the Med-Mal, and he turned 18, and are you saying that the probate court needed to give its approval to that settlement that's happening in another court when this ward is an adult?
Yes.
Not Mr. Collins as he is, but any adult, any minor that turns 18, is the probate court still has to approve a settlement that was pending while that individual was a minor?
Yes.
Where's the authority for that? Because I really am highly suspect of that statement.
Well, my authority is the statutes that the legislatures have mandated. And if you start with 2101.24, that's where it says the probate court has to dispose fully of any matter pending before it. Then you hop to 2109.
While it retains jurisdiction, but do you not agree the jurisdiction can be terminated?
Jurisdiction can be terminated, but not under these circumstances when the jurisdiction continues under 2109.32A, because what happens is, don't forget, once the ward turns 18, the guardian, forget incompetency, assume a ward that is not incompetent, once he turns 18, his guardian still has to file a final account to show what, you know, to take, to...
And the court's responsibility is to make sure that the guardian acted it within the statutory authority and the court orders that had emanated while that individual was a minor.
Well, I think that's where I would respectfully disagree, because the statute provides 2109.32AA, when the court is holding its hearing on the final account, it provides that whole laundry list of what the court's power is. And that's where the court is to inquire into, consider, determine all matters relative to the account and the manner in which the fiduciary, meaning the guardian, executed the fiduciary's trust, and the court is to may order the account approved and settled or make any other order as the court considers proper.
It's a factual matter in this case, and I know we're running down, so it's a very short question. Did any of the settlement proceeds come into the hands of the guardian before the minor turned 21? So did the guardian actually have a settlement check in the guardian's possession,
I do not believe University Hospital had delivered the settlement check to the guardian as of the Saturday that the ward turned 18.
Thank you.
And I know I've run out of time, and I just have one little statement. With respect to legal fees, and as a member of Squire Sanders, I would probably be interested in that question as well. We don't know if Mr. Nance or Squire Sanders is going to get paid as successor guardian, but what we do know is that Mr. Nance is dedicated as is Squire Sanders and will fulfill his fiduciary duties to protect the ward in this case as successor guardian.
Well, we've been encouraging lawyers to engage in pro bono activities. So.
I don't know if I'm authorized to say that, Your Honor, but
thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.